This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome in to a Thursday edition of Sports Daily. We certainly have plenty to get to today. We are fueled up and fired up with our Prairie Fire coffee. Thanks to them for keeping us fueled up and fired up every day at our Odyssey family of networks. It is Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Max Power producing for us. He's got that KFH hotline at 869-1240 for you. If you're driving into work, you can give Max a call. We'll get your thoughts out there. If you are, if you're not so publicly available, you can leave us your voice messages on our Odyssey app as well. If you listen there, you can leave us messages with the little microphone right there on the app. It's super easy. Or you can leave us video comments if you're watching the show right now. Of course, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, and we're proud to be on 12 News Plus. So glad to be here with you. We've got more reaction to the Joe Tooney trade. We've had some time to let it soak in a little bit. Just one small piece of what turned out to be a wild day across the NFL. Just haymaker after haymaker with rosters going on across the league. K-State, big winners last night. And they did it in an interesting way, quite frankly, but they got another road win. They got another back-to-back wins again. Coleman Hawkins played, was pretty effective, but K-State's defense was smothering. We'll have Tim Fitzgerald in the next hour to talk all about the Cats as they get one more to go before they get ready for a Big 12 tournament. And, of course, all we really are focused on right now is do they have a chance to make a run in that tournament? So we'll get with Fitz on that a little bit later as well. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, busy day today. A lot to get to on the program. Looking forward to, you know, talking to Fitz a little bit later on in the show just because of, you know, everything that happened last night in that game where, you know, Kansas State, they were able to get the win and they battled back. And you mentioned the defense. David Gasson had a double-double. It was a solid effort for Kansas State. It might not have been aesthetically pleasing to watch at times.
That's okay.
But they certainly were able to get the victory. And so looking forward to getting into it.
If you're going to make a run of any kind in March, you better be able to win some games that are not aesthetically pleasing. I'll just say that. So that I think it was a good thing for K-State to win it that way and know that they can go on the road and win it that way. But we'll get into all of that. We do have a busy show. Maybe even try to stop by Home Depot later. Don't know if there'll be time, but we'll get it all in. We'll get it all in here.
It's going to be a nice little Thursday.
What's that?
It's going to be a nice little Thursday.
A nice little Thursday. That's right. And we'll, as unexpected old school references, we'll try not to, you know, go Frank the Tank tonight at our Crestview beer tasting that we are getting into.
But it tastes so good once it hits your lips.
Make no promises. Make no promises. Was old school, as a total left turn here, was that era the peak of comedy?
Yes. 100% yes. I think for our generation, yes.
It's I think about this a lot, and let's just spend a few minutes here. I think about this a lot. Was the peak of comedy one rung before that with some of my all-time favorites, Dumb and Dumber, Tommy Boy, the Adam Sandler movies, like that era? Or because there was a little bit of a gap, just a little one. And then we get into the old school Anchorman, maybe sort of beginning with probably old school and ending with kind of, you know, The Hangover. I think probably that 4 or 5 year stretch. Man, there are so many good ones in both. I don't know which one I'd choose. And I really do think about this all the time. Like, I don't know which one of those I'd choose because they both hold such special places in my heart.
I mean, I think you could go back even further and make an argument for the years with Animal House and Caddyshack and, you know, like those years
love,
too.
Love those years, yeah. But I don't think they're holding up to the two sort of little eras that I'm talking, at least for me.
Man, older Max people, is having a conniption fit over
Max
here.
Is, yeah. I was just going to say, I'll bet you Max is going to have a heart attack at that. And I love all of those movies, but that's not what you grew up with, right? That's not those aren't the movies that taught me bad language and all the bad things like the next generation. And of course, I was old enough for that last generation. And push come to shove, those movies are probably better, but they're not as silly. I mean, I'll tell you, The Dumb and Dumber is my favorite movie of all time. So take that for what it is. I just, man, the heater we were on with you know, starting with old school and then going into like 40-year-old Virgin was there.
Good
just
stuff.
Like all those just couldn't miss with some of those movies.
Step Brothers, you got to have Step Brothers in the mix.
Yep, I think that one's not on my top list, but it was funny.
Yeah,
it was funny. And then where are we now, right? When was the last time you saw just like a funny movie?
Honestly, the last movie that I watched that I thought was funny was actually another Will Ferrell movie. It was the one that I think dropped on Amazon Prime a few months ago. It was him and Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he's playing a dad of a daughter that's getting married, and they've got all these wedding hijinks. It was pretty, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, old school funny right. or Anchorman funny, but it was funny. It was all right. That's the last time I think I've seen a comedy that I actually thought was good.
To be fair, I don't watch them like I used to. So it's a little unfair for me to say there aren't as many, but I don't think that you don't even hear about as many. Like it's not defining a generation
right.
like the others did.
So here's a really funny, old comedy movie story from my youth. One of my favorite movies, and I think will probably agree with me on this. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Jerk with Steve Martin. So good. So funny. It's outstanding. But when I was a kid, I would always watch it when it was on TV. So until I became an adult, I never watched the actual theatrical version of the show. So, of course, it's edited for TV and all of that. So if anybody, you know, I'm sure a lot of people out there have watched The Jerk. You know the name of the dog. You know the name of Steve Martin's dog in that movie. All throughout my childhood, I thought the dog's name was stupid because they had to edit it for TV. It's an expletive. Yeah. You can't say that on TV. And so it was quite a shock when I would talk to people as an adult, and I'm like, oh, that movie's so good. I can't believe they named the dog stupid. They're like, no, that is not the dog's name in the actual movie. It wasn't until I became an adult that I realized I was wrong.
And listen, Max, I don't want you to be like the National Lampoon's movies, those movies,
anything with Chevy Chase, anything with John Candy. Oh,
for
yeah.
Me,
the John Candy like, movies are great.
I will watch it anytime it's on TV. It just like I had to come back to those movies because I would have been like a toddler when those movies came out. So, Max, I would assume that is your golden era of comedy.
You never saw Fast Times, I take it.
Oh, Fast Times is a great movie.
Yeah, sure I did. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great movie. Great movie. None of this is to disparage that generation. I was just a little bit behind it. So I came back to those movies a little bit later. They're great movies, though.
Wedding Crashers.
Great movies.
We didn't even talk about Wedding Crashers in that mix of that generation.
Oh, I thought
Wedding Crashers is so good.
But they're all sort of lumped together. Like that
the Vince Vaughn, Will Ferrell
the
era.
Two outlet, like old school and then The Hangover are a little bit different. And to me, those are probably the best two. But everything crammed in there was, you know, that same
American
they
Pie
all kind of felt the same. They were great. What?
Were you an American Pie fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You better believe it.
Road trip?
I put that one back with the other
guy
generation.
Too. Yeah.
American Pie was more the one before, I think, than...
It was kind of right in the middle. Like, it was kind of the bridge. It was the bridge between...
It was. But I think of those as, like, adolescent years, right? Like, when I was in middle school and maybe high school, and then while all the others came after high school. We love comedy. Comedy's back, baby. Maybe we'll get some funny movies, too. We're getting great stand-up lately. All right, we're going to come back. We'll actually talk sports here. Let's digest the Tooney trade. We'll get through that. We'll get through another wild day in the NFL, too, just as a whole. That's all coming for you here on Sports Daily.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Your legend begins aboard the Disney Destiny, the all-new ship from Disney Cruise Line, sailing November 2025. Log in and listen to KFH on Odyssey for a chance to win a trip for four to set sail on the Disney Destiny in this national contest. All you need to do is listen for an hour on the Odyssey app. You can find out more at kfhradio.com. Glad to be here with you, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, coming to you here on KFH. And there is a ton to get through in the NFL. And it all sort of started yesterday with Joe Tooney and the Chiefs making the decision to trade Joe Tooney. But after that, as we're trying to react to that, you get, you get DK Metcalf looking for a trade. Guy we followed forever, Tyler Lockett, gone from Seattle as well. You get the Chargers releasing Joey Bosa. You get Max Crosby becoming the highest paid non-quarterback in football. It was a day. For the NFL, Tommy, but for us, and I guess for everybody else, it sort of started with this Tooney trade for the Chiefs to the Bears. And, you know, again, just to reiterate, a 2026 fourth round pick. So something that doesn't help them at all this year, outside of course, the financial implications in which they freed up that Joe Tooney money.
Yeah, there were obviously, as you mentioned, a lot of different moves that happened yesterday. You mentioned Max Crosby getting paid. Joey Bosa getting cut, which that's surprising to me. I know they're trying to clear some cap space and all of that, but it's funny, or at least interesting, that you've got two teams in the Chiefs division, one of which paid their edge rusher and the other one released their edge rusher. Found that kind of interesting. And then the DK Metcalf news, I think, is could be consequential. Diana Russini reported this morning that the Seahawks, get this, the Seahawks are thinking that they would like to get a first and a third round pick for DK Metcalf. And I'm like, good luck with that. I don't think there's any team in the world that's going to give the Seahawks a first and a third for DK Metcalf when there are so many veteran wide receivers that are available. And there was all this discussion yesterday. And I know that I think Rich Eisen was talking about it on his program yesterday. Of course, he follows us here on KFH. He posed the question, is the wide receiver the new running back? you know, remember like a couple years ago when the running backs weren't getting paid and there were so many of them. Are wide receivers now the new running back because there are so many veteran wide receivers that are available out there? I think it's impossible that the Seahawks are going to get what they're looking for in DK Metcalf. But there, I mean, the market, it's definitely, I think, a buyer's market to go out and get, you know, the wide receiver that you want and not have to pay a whole lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, he's making $31 million this year. That's the problem. Like, you'd be lucky if you get a third, if somebody just takes on the contract.
Right.
You're not getting a first for an older player. I mean, how old is DK Metcalf? He's, let's just check here. DK is 6 years in the league. Yeah, he's 27. No, ain't going to happen. Not going to happen. Sorry. Like, good luck, Seattle.
Yeah, they want a first and a third round pick, and then Metcalf also wants a new contract worth around $30 million a year. I'm like, you guys are dreaming if you think that there's any team in the NFL that's going to give you a first and third and then go and pay DK $30 million a year after they gave up a first and third round pick. I like DK Metcalf, but not that much.
No, I mean, it just doesn't make any financial sense. Tommy, I'm going to give you his last 3 years. He's had right around 1,000 yards, never more than 8 touchdowns. The last 2 years, he's caught 66 balls each season. Like, he's good. He's a good player. But come on now. Like, are you kidding me? Like, he played in all, you know, he doesn't miss any time, so those numbers aren't like skewed or anything. But 66 catches the last 2 years,
yeah,
and right around 1,000 yards and an average of, what would that be, 6.5 touchdowns? No. Yeah. Like, I don't want to say he's a dime a dozen.
Right.
He's not a dime a dozen, but come on. Like, that ain't going to happen.
Honestly, he's probably just above a dime a dozen. Like, he's not in that elite status. He's not a Justin Jefferson, you know, like that sort of thing. He's better than the, you know, normal crop of wide receivers. But I don't know if you're ranking it. He's probably a B. Like, wouldn't you say he's kind of a B receiver, I think, for a team that brings him in? Or maybe a B plus?
Yeah, I'd be okay still with B plus, maybe. Maybe. I'm just looking real quick because I'm curious here. His status in the league last year would have put him at the 25th. He was 25th in the league in yards. Okay. Let's go to receptions. He was 39th, right above Demario Douglas. So, and he played 15 games,
yeah,
right? So even if he played all 17, caught 5 balls in each of those other 2 games, which is about his average, he'd still only be 20 in the, like, around 25, right? So no.
And here's another update, by the way. Adam Schefter reporting that Metcalf prefers to be dealt to a contender. So there are three, it's first and third round pick, an extension of $30 million a year from a contender. I want what he is smoking. I want what the Seahawks are smoking, because that is just, it's absolutely not going to happen.
And he's 27 years old, and he is a physical specimen, which is a problem as you get older, right? Like, he's this big physical receiver. That's going to be a problem for him in the next 2-3 years when he wants this new deal. I'll give you a comparison. T. Higgins, who reportedly today is there, a lot of teams are checking in on T. Higgins, in only 12 games last year, outproduced DK Metcalf in an offense that also features Ja'Marr Chase, right? So, like, if you want an example of the kind of receiver that is going to net that sort of return, you can look at a guy like T. Higgins, not DK Metcalf. He is past that portion of his career. So, what's far more likely is, yeah, maybe they can find a contender. The chances are good there, because a contender is going to be the only team that wants to bring in DK Metcalf, right? Like, you're not going to find some bad team going after DK Metcalf. So for Metcalf, you got to know you ain't getting 3 years and $90 million. Like, that's not going to happen. So you can, and he's the one who asked to be traded, right? Is that him?
Yeah, no, he's requesting a trade, correct.
Yeah, yeah, and they're granting that request. Okay, So he'll go out there and quickly learn. And maybe that's all the Seahawks are doing. Be like, yeah, you know what? You think you can get 3 years, $30 million? Why don't you go shop around? And then they'll find out that they, in fact, there's no appetite for that.
Wouldn't you rather trade? Wouldn't you rather, if you're a contender, or maybe not even a contender, if you're a team looking for a wide receiver, wouldn't you rather trade for a guy like Brandon Ayuk than DK Metcalf? Because I know the 49ers are shopping Ayuk. I mean, Ayuk is a little bit younger than Metcalf is. And, it, you know, I think
that
they're not as accomplished, but he's going to be less expensive, I would think, than what Metcalf is looking for. I don't think Ayuk is eyeing a $30 million a year extension. I wouldn't think, at least. I don't know. That would be, I would rather go after a guy like Ayuk. I would rather call the Bengals, like you mentioned, and see if they're willing to trade T. Higgins, who they've tagged for the second straight year. Those both would make more sense to me if I'm a GM than giving up a first and a third and a $30 million extension for DK Metcalf.
If I am in that market, yeah, he's not going to be close to the first call I'd make. I'd call the Dolphins. If I'm willing to trade that kind of capital, I'm calling the Dolphins to ask about Tyreek Hill. Ayuk. I'll call the Jets probably before any team and ask about Garrett Wilson. You know, is he fit into their long term? Now, or if we're talking about Garrett Wilson now, like, okay, yeah, I'd trade a first and be willing to extend that player. He's like 24 years old.
Yeah.
25 years old. Yes. Okay. Fine. But not for an aging guy who's big and you know, very likely to his body to betray him a little bit.
Or you've got a pretty deep pool of free agents out there. I mean, like, you don't even need to give up any picks at all. And you could go out there and you could sign.
Devontae Adams.
Steph Diggs is a free agent. I know, coming off of an injury, but you could sign Steph Diggs. You know, Chris Godwin is a free agent. You know, there are several. I mean, the Seahawks just let Tyler Lockett go. Again, he's older and all of that. But there's a deeper pool of free agents where you don't have to give up any draft capital at all to get them.
This isn't a DK Metcalf bash session either. I still think he's a really good player. Don't misunderstand. It's just like that sort of ask. Even if he didn't want an extension, taking on $30 million next year for me, I'm like, no. I'll call Devontae Adams first and give him $20 million for 1 year or whatever it ends up being and go attack it that way. But I'm definitely not giving up draft capital to do it. Not like that. And I'm definitely not doing an extension if I'm already having to take on $30 million this year. Like, none of those things are happening together. So there's probably a pretty good chance that DK Metcalf quickly learns that, you know, the market is not, like, people are going to say no, or maybe we're undervaluing DK Metcalf. Maybe he's better than we're giving him credit for. Probably is. I really like DK Metcalf.
I like him too.
I think he's great, but he's not that good and not anymore. So, you know, good luck. That ain't going to happen though. There's other receivers out there. Chris Godwin's a stud. Tampa will be crazy if they don't bring Godwin back. Devontae Adams is, I mean, you want to talk about a hired hand. He's the guy. Devontae Adams is who you go get, isn't it? Like, he's going to be probably on a 1 year deal.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I don't think you'd have to give up the farm to get him. I wouldn't think. You know who I feel like is sitting.
He has better production than DK Metcalf last year across the board.
You know who I think is probably sitting back and watching the free agent market go crazy right now and is probably really happy with the move that they made? The Commanders. You know, they traded for Deebo Samuel you know, they give up a fourth, I think, or a fifth. I can't remember exactly.
Well, that tells you the market too.
Right. And so, like, but they got it done. Like, they got another weapon for Jaden Daniels to pair alongside Terry McLaurin. And they can just sort of sit back and watch, you know, DK Metcalf request a trade and watch Devontae Adams have all these suitors and, like, whatever. And they're done. Like, they're set. They got their trade done early. And I think that they're probably like, man, we did a really good job there, you know, getting Deebo for not a whole lot.
Yeah, I agree. Deebo was a better fit for them, I think, than he would be for a lot of teams. That was another reason I really liked that trade. But it does give you some idea. Like, the market right now is telling you, as Devontae Adams is cut, as Debo's traded for a fourth, as we start to see some of this, to Rich Eisen's point, if that's what he said yesterday, is it becoming the new running back? Maybe. I think more so. And this is a league full of trends, right? It's a league where this happens all the time. There are trends in this league. Right now, a part of it is because every year we see so many rookie receivers have big impacts every single year now. And so when you're cost evaluating, how do you justify a trade for DK Metcalf if it costs you a first round pick and $30 million? You can't. So it's not going to happen. But then there's Devontae Adams, who outproduced DK Metcalf across the board last year. More touchdowns, more catches. I think he had about this, almost the exact same yardage. Boy, first ballot Hall of Famer. He's older, right? What is he, 32?
31.
I speaking of the Rich Eisen show, who covers the NFL, I'm so glad he follows us because their NFL coverage is outstanding. I jumped on yesterday, and the team they brought up that makes the most sense, and I agree. Like, if you're the Buffalo Bills, and all it costs you is a little money right now, Devontae Adams, who made his living in a cold weather football city, you got to go make that happen. He may want to play with Rodgers, that's fine, but you got to make that call. Like, yo, dude, come on. If Devontae Adams went to the Bills, I told you yesterday the Ravens are probably my as of March 5th, based on the roster we currently see with all the questions that still need to be answered, my favorite. If Adams went to the Bills, that might change. That might change. And of course, the Chiefs will have plenty to say by the time they sort out their needs. But man, Adams to the Bills seems like it makes way too much sense not to happen.
They're going to have
unless
to do,
Adams doesn't want to go there.
They're going to have to do some restructuring. Max just let me know that the Bills are $12 million in the red against the salary cap. So they're going to have to, I mean, and a lot of teams are that way. They're going to have to, you know, make those restructuring moves and that sort of thing. The Cowboys just did that with Dak Prescott to free up some salary cap space. They restructured his contract.
And CeeDee Lamb.
Can
we talk about talk about the Cowboys for
sure.
a second? $60 million they freed up. And you don't free up that money through restructures unless you're fully intent on spending that money.
You would hope.
So
you would think
they don't save any money. Like It doesn't save them. It's not like they get to put $60 million in their pocket.
Don't count your chickens before they're hatched. I mean, probably do some spending too, but let's not get our hopes up that they're going to go. And even if they make moves, they're going to make the right ones.
That's the point. The Cowboys, the Cowboys are a great drafting team.
Yeah.
They are not a great team at contract negotiations and contract decisions historically. So now they've got Jerry Jones has $60 million burning a hole in his pocket that he's got to go find a way to figure out how to spend. Now I will say though, I have a Cowboys thread with some buddies yesterday and I was like, listen, like as we're all, you know, dogging the Cowboys all the time. I'm like with the way historically that they draft and $60 million, they can go get a whole lot better than they were last year. Now, how do you spend it? My contention with them is, well, hey, you got to fix the offensive line because they lost Zach Martin. I think they'll probably do that through the draft. Go bring in just two defensive smashers and try to be the best defense in football because you can't make it all about Dak. We know that's not going to work. So try to go be the best defense like they have been some years in the last four or five. Go try that. And see what you can do to fix the line. It's a running back loaded class. This is an off season for everything that they did wrong last year with those two restructures that do kind of favor them a little bit. I really wish Zach Martin wouldn't have retired. That sucks because if he was still there and they would have had a little bit of that money coming back. But man, oh man,
well,
what an interesting off season for them.
I'll believe it when I see it that they can actually make the right free agency picks.
Oh yeah.
You know, like
the chances of that are low.
I have this thought in my head that they'll probably make a couple of moves, and the moves that they make will probably be like, what are they doing? Why are they paying that player? I don't even have an example of who that would be, but
they'll give Aaron Jones $40 million for 1 year or something.
Yeah, something stupid, and we're like, what are you guys doing?
Go trade a first and a third for DK Metcalf.
Right. Maybe that's why the Seahawks are putting him out on the block
give,
like that.
Give him $30 million.
They
a
think
year.
That the Cowboys might. I mean, hey, CeeDee Lamb and DK Metcalf would be fun, but I could totally see the Cowboys overpaying for him.
An all initial wide receiver room that doesn't actually make you that much better. Yeah,
right.
that'd be the Cowboys. That's a Jerry Jones move. Oh, what do you Seattle? You want a first and a third? We'll give you a first and a second. How about that? And
hey, DK,
we'll pay
you want a $30 million extension? Let's make it 40. Why not?
Yeah,
we've got the room.
We're going to sell some Metcalf jerseys. Yeah, God, I can see it now.
Hey, guess what, everybody? Our season tickets sold out quicker than they ever have before.
Yeah.
We brought in DK.
I wouldn't be angry if they traded for DK Metcalf. I'd be angry if they traded a first and third for DK Metcalf. That would be dumb, but ugh. And then you've got Joey Bosa being released. I told you yesterday when you sent me that last night, which I guess after you sent that to me, I looked. I guess it was expected. It's $25 million. I think it was fairly accepted. So that he could shift things as well. Sort of like Devontae Adams, right? He's a player that could go help a contender and put them over the edge. I don't think there's much doubt about that. I don't know why, but I had this feeling when you sent me that. I was like, the Chargers are going to go trade for Myles Garrett. And they want to use some of that money to go trade for Myles Garrett. That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that, because I don't think the Chargers have any interest in not getting better this offseason. So if you're going to let go of Joey Bosa, who at $25 million, like, that's not a terrible contract, why would they do that? Just have this so weird, like, weird place to go immediately. I'm like, they're going to trade for Myles Garrett. We'll see. I think that would make sense, actually, but we'll see.
I think that even if it was expected for them to part ways with Joey Bosa, to me, I understand that they're saving money with him not on the roster, and so there is a benefit there. But it's surprising to me that somebody the talent level of Joey Bosa, that the Chargers weren't able to do anything else with him prior to getting to this point. You know, like getting some kind of value in return for him other than just the cap savings, but you know, getting some draft picks and like trying to trade him or sign him to an extension or all the different things that you could do with the player before you have to get to a point to where you just cut him and you save that money. It's surprising to me that they weren't, and maybe they've been trying to work on something, but it's interesting to me that they weren't able to get anything done to either get more value in return for Bosa or to be able to lock him up.
Rick says on YouTube that Bosa was always hurt. Bosa was hurt a lot. It has a lot to do with why they got rid of him, but he played, I think, what did he play, 14 games last year? He's obviously an impactful player when he is out there. Somebody's going to take a chance on Bosa. He'll get a pretty good deal, I think. But it made some sense for the Chargers. I get it. But I don't think they want to leave that hole at pass rusher. Khalil Mack, less of a factor these days. Watch them to go make a trade for Myles Garrett. Just have this feeling. We'll see. All right, the Chiefs kind of got all the crazy news of yesterday started, Tommy, with the Joe Tooney trade. I'm not swaying from my initial reaction to it that it would lead to them signing Ronnie Stanley. I still think that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to extend Trey Smith and move some of that money. I think they are going to restructure. Look at what the Cowboys just did with their two-star players, right? The Chiefs have that sort of wiggle room still in restructuring. I don't think Chris Jones has ever been restructured, right? Patrick Mahomes has plenty of restructure room. And now, in theory, they could restructure Travis Kelce, who said on his podcast yesterday that he'll play out his contract at least this year, that sort of stuff. He doesn't know about the year after that. I believe him in that. I don't think he knows for sure what he would do after this year. But I would guess that after this contract, there will be some finality one way or the other with next season. So there's probably room to restructure for him a little bit too. They're going to be able to find the money. It's do they then immediately spend it on Ronnie Stanley or do they spend it somewhere on the defense? I think it's more likely that they go after Ronnie Stanley.
Yeah, I don't think.
Still my gut feeling, and I still think it's the case.
I don't think that you tag Trey Smith and then you trade Joe Tooney to then go out and sign Donovan Smith to fill a hole at left tackle.
Or to go out and re-sign Nick Bolton.
Right.
I think the more likely alternative.
Like, I think that there is going to be, I think, some sort of move that is made to make that left tackle position better or at least more high profile. And whether or not that's Ronnie Stanley or if that is making a trade for somebody else, I don't know. But I don't think that you go and you make that move by trading away not only the guy who was your best left guard in Joe Tooney, but also your best left tackle when he needed to be your left tackle last season, to throw out Kingsley Suamataia at left tackle again next year, to go and draft another potential left tackle of the future. I don't think that that's the direction that the Chiefs are going to go. I think if they had kept Joe Tooney, then you're probably more likely to see another patchwork left tackle. And I just don't think that that's going to be the direction that they go.
It's kind of Ronnie Stanley or bust too, I think. You know, if you do that, and you got to think about this in totality, you've got big money tied up in Stanley, big money tied up in Humphrey and Smith, Taylor too, but Taylor will come off the books moderately soon. You have a long-term future plan at left guard is probably Suamataia now. And then at right tackle, in theory, could be Wanye Morris, right? Like down the road. So I think, you know, while it would be financially strapping this year, right, to have that many players on the line tied up, but Juwan Taylor, he's got a base salary of about $20 million. He's guaranteed nothing after this year. And his dead money number next year goes down tremendously. So he's almost certainly going to be gone. I would think, and again, I'm not an expert on the salary cap stuff, but I would think that they'll pay, like he'll be fine this year and then they'll cut him next year. So you got to think of this in a chess way too. You go and you've got all that money tied up, but it comes off with Taylor. You have your backup plan at left guard, which by all accounts is going to be Kingsley Suamataia. Then if you let go of Taylor next year, you'd have Wanye Morris. Be high paid. So now you're a little more flexible financially on the line, right? And they probably between now and then sign somebody they think could play right tackle if it's not Wanye Morris. So I think there's the pieces are in place to make this happen. Rick points out again on injuries. Ronnie Stanley is injury prone, and that's why the Ravens are willing to let him go. And I've said a thousand times it makes me nervous that the Ravens are willing to let him go. But he's better than what the Chiefs have had. And if you're willing to take the injury risk and maybe they can mitigate that somehow.
It's better. He's better than what the Chiefs have had. The replacement value is high for Stanley, but he's also better than the other options that are available to upgrade.
There aren't a lot of them.
Yeah.
Now they could go find a trade partner still. I suppose that's an option. The problem is all the teams that would maybe be willing to trade a left tackle are looking for a left tackle. Right, all the teams that are bad enough to be willing to do something crazy like that kind of suck on the line, and they're all looking for offensive line.
On top of that, quality left tackles are at a premium, and so the teams that you know might be willing to put their left tackle on the block that the Chiefs would look at, they're gonna require a pretty penny in return to make that acquisition. So in a case like a Ronnie Stanley, who again I know he's what 32, 31, 32. Regardless of his injury history and all of that, the investment that the Chiefs would have to make, I think even if they're signing him to a $20 million a year deal for 2 years, is going to be less than giving up draft capital for the future and then, you know, what it might take to take on a contract of somebody that they'd be trading for. So I think that as far as what the cost would be, the cost of the acquisition is going to be actually less, I think, to go and sign a free agent like Ronnie Stanley than to go and try to find a trade partner. And those trade partners know that their left tackles are at a premium.
Yeah, it's tricky. And I'm just pulling something up here just to kind of compare Stanley to what the Chiefs have been able to do there. So obviously Stanley's going to be better than everybody they had last year. But here's something interesting. In 2024, in which he played all the games, he was 21st. In the league, according to Pro Football Focus, he was the 21st best pass blocker. Orlando Brown Jr. last year, Pro Football Focus had as the 12th graded pass blocker. His grade was 82.5. Stanley was 79.6. So close, right? So close. So we can't think of Stanley as peak Eric Fisher, right? Or peak, like, use whatever example. Like, you're not getting the best tackle in the league in Ronnie Stanley. He's about what they had in Orlando Brown Jr. That's a pretty good... Now, that's... And that's a good... That's not... I'm not saying that's a bad thing, right? That's not a bad thing at all. That's kind of the player he is. Now, the Chiefs, it's not that the Chiefs didn't like Orlando Brown Jr. They didn't want to pay Orlando Brown Jr. what he was ultimately going to get paid, which is what he got paid to go to Cincinnati.
And by the way, what was the best thing about Orlando Brown when he was with the Chiefs? What do you think the best thing?
Consistency.
Stability, consistency. Yeah. You didn't have to worry about it. It wasn't like he was the best left tackle ever to play the game. I mean, he wasn't. He got paid to go to Cincinnati and cashed in, and more power to him. That's awesome. But he wasn't like this Hall of Famer left tackle, all pro left tackle. He was good. He was stable. He was consistent. And I think that's overlooked a little bit, because I don't think the Chiefs are looking for somebody to be like this groundbreaking, totally move the needle, best left tackle in the world. You just need somebody that is stable and consistent, and you don't have to worry about, because they've had a lot of worrying to do over the last couple of years in that position.
I hope not, because they're not getting Ronnie. They're not getting that. Yeah. That's not what Ronnie Stanley is.
And that's okay.
He's an injury-prone player that's about as good as Orlando Brown Jr. was. Orlando Brown Jr. with Cincinnati, Tommy, is making an average salary of about $15 million a year. Stanley's probably going to cost you more than that. The elephant in the room, to me, when I look at all this, is that they should have just paid Orlando Brown Jr. And I will say full disclosure, I did not think they should pay Orlando Brown Jr.
I think the elephant in the room, it's two parts. It's what you just mentioned to start off. It's that they should have paid Orlando Brown, and they never should have paid Jawan Taylor what they paid him.
Mm.
I've been shouting that from the mountaintop since day one. That could, in theory, go down as the worst contract that Brett Veach has ever given somebody on the Chiefs. Just because of what he does, it doesn't mean that he's a bad, I mean, he's not great, but you know, like the fact that you're paying him like a left tackle,
he's pretty bad.
And he's not like unplayable. He's not like Kingsley Suamataia was last year on the left side of the line. He's not unplayable on the right side, but that contract that they gave him, left tackle money, and he's never played a snap at left tackle, that's going to go down, I think, is probably the worst contract that we've seen from Brett Veach.
How did they get him?
They
45th overall. No,
he came from the Jags.
What did they do to get him? It was a trade.
Trade. They traded for him.
That's what I'm trying to find. What did they trade? It's not just the money that sucks. It's that they traded for him. Can't remember. I'm trying to remember what they gave up to get him.
He was a free agent. They signed him out of free agency. Almost exactly 2 years ago on March 16th, it was a 4-year $80 million contract.
The elephant in the room was they tried to find a right tackle again to make a left tackle.
Yeah.
Okay. I agree. That was a bad deal. He's never played a snap at left tackle. It's not even like they tried and he wasn't good. Like he's been a problem. And his money will clear. So what does Ronnie Stanley give you? Ronnie Stanley gives you about what Orlando Brown does. He gives it to you more expensive. You know, you could have had Orlando Brown for less money probably, and had that stability there. If they re-sign Orlando Brown, do they win a second straight Super Bowl 2 years ago and then one last? I mean, who knows, right? Who knows?
I mean, Jawan Taylor currently is the third highest paid right tackle in the NFL. The third high, I mean, behind Tristan Wirfs and Pene Sewell from the Lions. Those two guys both have total contract values of over $100 million. And then Jawan Taylor is tied for third with Lane Johnson from the Eagles at $80 million overall.
Yeah. You're talking about, I mean, three of the best linemen in football.
Yep.
There, by the way. Yeah, it's tough. And they just have so many things. It's why the Tooney thing, I get it, does make me nervous.
You can't pay them all. You can't pay them all.
We'll get into it in the next hour. He's the safest one, though, of all of them. So we'll talk about it. We got another hour of Sports Daily. Stick around. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you on this Thursday edition of the program. We have Tim Fitzgerald coming up in a little bit to talk about that K-State win last night in Cincinnati. Make sure you're here with us for that discussion as they get ready to take on the Big 12 tournament after one more regular season game. It is the Big 12 Women's Tournament up in Kansas City. An interesting court that they're showing off. I assume it'll be the same as it was for the men if you didn't see it.
I thought that I was having eye problems when I looked at that. I'm like, what, am I like having a stroke? What is going on with this court?
It's something. It's something. We'll call it that. So we'll have that for you a little bit later as well. We've been discussing this craziness in the NFL, and it's always wild in the offseason. Man, it felt monumental yesterday for a lot of reasons. And, you know, we, of course, are following the Chiefs in it with Joe Tooney and all of those things. We'll continue that discussion. The quarterback movement, how does that impact everything? What does that do to all of it? I think it all sort of goes hand in hand. You kind of need to see where the core. But what's interesting is we are seeing some movement. You mentioned the Deebo Samuel trade. It's like there are some teams getting out ahead of things, and there may be some advantages to doing that. Because we don't know what the market looks like, and you can control what you can control. I would say the Chiefs, Tommy, are also a sort of a part of that group, right? That's not being reactionary, but a little more proactive, which is why we see a trade like we saw. And by the way, for the Bears are doing a great job.
They are. Right?
The worst lines in football and went and solved and filled two holes with one okay player and one Pro Bowler, and they didn't give up much to do it.
Yeah, and they need to. It's really a smart move on their part, because if they can give their young quarterback, who they haven't had to pay yet, the most protection possible and actually invest the money in the protection, because they're going to give Joe Tooney an extension, right? Like, that's going to be part of it, I'm sure. I think that's a really smart strategic move for them, to give him as much protection as possible until they have to pay him, you know, that huge salary once he gets through his rookie deal.
Yeah. And they gave him the weapons, right? So they kind of did it maybe a little out of order. You'd probably like to protect him first, then load him up with all the weapons. But remember, they bring in all these weapons. They brought in Keenan Allen. They brought in DJ Moore. They brought in DeAndre Swift. They drafted Roma Dunze. They did all those things, but then they couldn't protect him last year. And if you ever watched a Bears game, it was a problem, right? And I still believe in Caleb Williams. So what do they do the next time around? They go and they plug two massive holes on their line, one of which with Joe Tooney. Joe Tooney's as good a guard as there is in the league. They went and they got him for a fourth.
Yeah. A future fourth, not even anything right away.
The Bears are doing work right now. Let's keep an eye on the Bears, I think, because I think, and you know, the Commanders go and make, again, a move that doesn't cost them a lot, and you're like, okay. And now it makes it just, and I keep my eye on it, because it's like, okay, who are the other teams that are going to be shrewd here and go do some things? While all the noise and the chaos of, you know, T. Higgins and now Bosa and now DK Metcalf and the quarterbacks all over the place, who's going to sneak in there under the radar and make some moves? That's what the Chiefs have done for a long time. The Chiefs make early moves in the offseason. They make them quick. They're fast and furious with what they want to do. And I suspect we're seeing that again, obviously, with the Tooney trade, but even more than that, I don't think they're going to sit around on anything.
One other thing to point out is that we've seen a flurry of these wide receivers that have now hit the free agent pool. And I think that bodes well for the people that really want some kind of combination of Hollywood Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, and Juju Smith-Schuster back for the Chiefs, because that pool is deep. And the more you get wide receivers in the free agent pool, the more it brings the overall price down of everybody. And so I don't think it's realistic that we'll see two of the three come back, but I wouldn't be shocked if they're able to get one of those guys back on the Chiefs roster, because you're not going to, in theory, you're probably not going to have to pay them quite as much as you would have if you didn't have other guys, you know, entering free agency.
Which one do you want?
I'd love to have Hollywood Brown back. I think out of the three, Brown would be the guy that I would probably look at.
He'll probably be the most expensive. Does that change your opinion on that?
Probably not. I mean, I think that having him alongside Worthy and Rice in some capacity, I mean, that's what the Chiefs wanted last year. They didn't get it, but they'd love to have it. I'd love to actually see that come to fruition.
Well, it's a good question. Which one of those three would I want? And we have to factor cost. If we're not factoring cost, obviously we pick Hollywood Brown. If I'm not factoring cost, I mean, sorry, if I'm factoring cost, God, I might want Juju back.
You want Juju back? You've been the
at
biggest
the cost,
Juju hater that I've ever
I'm not
known.
A Juju hater.
What? Yeah, you are. Come on. Like, no. All the times that you're like,
no, you go back in this show's archives 3 years ago, and I said Juju Smith-Schuster was the receiver the Chiefs should trade for immediately a year before they did it. I'm not a Juju hater at all.
I don't know. I remember times where you're like, well, you know, what are you going to get from him? You're not going to get much out of him. He's Juju.
He was not good enough to be the alpha, right? That was my point when they needed more than him. But I am not Juju the player. I like Juju the player. They just were asking him to be something he was not going to be for a while. Last year, he was everything they needed him to be. I like the player. He's just not a top-end wide receiver in the NFL, which the first time they brought him in, and I thought he would be then too. He wasn't. That was my
But they
only point
brought him back out of necessity. They were, I mean, they
and
Brown
he,
went
and
down with an injury. They had
helpful.
To have him.
I'm just... But it's not because I like Juju more than DeAndre Hopkins or Hollywood Brown. I like all three of them, actually. It's that if Rashee Rice plays a majority of the season, now and you have Worthy and you know Kelsey's coming back, I think depth becomes the bigger... I don't know that I foresee an offense where the Chiefs are going to take a lot of deep shots, which is why you'd like to have Hollywood Brown in there, right? Because Worthy's not that dude. We know that now. So Hollywood would probably become that dude for you. And D-Hop, although he's older, still has the ability to do that too. Juju does not. I don't know that that's going to be really a big part of their offense.
Well, and by the way, remember that the whole point of Hollywood coming to Kansas City on a one-year deal was the same reason that they brought in Juju on a one-year deal that very first time. It was a prove-it type deal. It was the thought that, you know, he can go get a long-term deal somewhere else, but he's going to kind of get his career back on path, back on track, and then another team will sign him. Well, Brown was out the entire year except for a couple games in the playoffs. And so, I mean, I have a hard time thinking, especially with how deep the wide receiver free agent pool is, that there's going to be a team out there that's going to be willing to give Hollywood Brown a multi-year deal. And so this upcoming season could very well be that prove it year that they wanted to have from him a year ago. Like, I think it's fairly, I'm fairly optimistic that the Chiefs can get Brown back on another one-year deal and actually make this upcoming year be that prove it year that he was hoping for last year.
I do think they would both have interest in that. I don't know that the Chiefs are in the same financial situation they were a year ago, though, for that to make as much sense with them. Let's talk about that when we come back in the next segment. We'll talk about that. We'll continue to discuss the Chiefs' options here, because I do think it all goes hand in hand back to the Tooney trade. Like, all of it is a part of the reason some of this makes sense. We haven't even really talked about in great detail what it could do to impact the defense. So we'll have all that. Want to say a quick thanks to Crestview Country Club for being supporters of this program. We are headed out there for a beer tasting tonight. What do we get? 5 local brews here.
Yeah. And I'm not sure where they're from, but I know that there are great local breweries all around here. And so I'm sure wherever it comes from tonight, it's going to be amazing.
So we're part of what's called the beer club out there at Crestview. Not a lot of explanation needed there, right? We're in the beer club.
We're in the beer club. We like beer.
So we're just going to. We're going to go drink some beer there, and they're going to give us some free beer.
If you're a part of the beer club at Crestview, all I know is that if you tell the bartender that you're part of the beer club, you magically get a larger beer when you order one. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to know. I say I'm in the beer club, and my beer like doubles in size. It's amazing.
That's right. And there'll be snacks.
Yeah.
We'll have snacks, beer and snacks. So we're looking forward to that. Thanks to Crestview. They got that kind of thing, like the thing we're going to tonight. Seriously, every night, whatever tickles your fancy, they probably have events to that will cater to your needs.
We did the wine tasting a week ago. This is going to be maybe a little bit of a different vibe than the wine tasting was last year.
It's more my speed.
Yeah.
You know, they don't appreciate it when we go to a wine tasting and I ask if we can slap the bag. If you know, you know. But you know, this will probably be more my speed, but that's okay. They got something for everybody there. Give them a call, ask them about all their membership options. And man, when was the last time you slapped the bag? It's probably,
high school, college,
go a decade.
Yeah. It's been
go a decade.
It's been a long time for me since I've done that.
Yeah. I'd probably be okay the rest of my life if I never slapped another bag. That'd probably be all right.
There should have been, by the way, I know you couldn't make it to the wine tasting last week. There should have been a camera on me the entire time because I'm trying to follow the lead of everybody. I looked like an idiot. Like I'm trying to swirl the wine in my glass. I'm wafting the fumes of it. I don't know what any of it means.
I taste the notes of nuttiness there. What's this? Shallow and pedantic. What's that for? What is shallow and pedantic? That's from some cartoon.
That's my nickname is shallow and pedantic.
Tannins.
What was it, Max?
The wine tannins.
Oh, there you go. I learned a lot from
We'll come back. More Sports Daily. Chiefs talk continues next. All right, so you brought up the wide receiver position. Like, the Chiefs have a lot of needs. I think we undersold the sheer volume of turnover the Chiefs roster was going to see this offseason. We focused on the big ones. Trey Smith was the big one, right? And then now there's Nick Bolton. There's Justin Reed. There's Charles Menehue. There's all those wide receivers, Kareem Hunt. The Chiefs have a lot that they'll need to replace. I think it's interesting. As Travis Kelce comes back and they do get ready to sort of try to make one more run in the current iteration. But what I think is very interesting about the offseason, Tommy, is it's one that it's also critical that they do some things to stretch the window here a little bit. Like, it'd be real easy to push it all in for this year, but I don't think that makes a lot of sense. So they got to try to do both, and they got to try to do both without a lot of money, hence the Joe Tooney trade. He's 32 years old. He's due for another big contract after the big contract he's already on. He's very good, but if you are going to invest in Humphrey and Smith, if you know it's going to be expensive, whether it be draft or money, to do left tackle, you're already too invested in right tackle. Like, it does make some sense. It sucks that it's him because you could make a case 100% that he was the team's MVP last year.
Totally.
There is absolutely a case to be made with the shift that he made and what he provided the team that he was the team's most valuable player last year outside of the obvious Patrick Mahomes. So it's crazy to imagine trading him. I think that's what caught us so off guard is like, wait, what? But it does make some sense. He's the oldest of the group. And while it'll be easy to just walk away from Jawan Taylor when the time comes, it's harder to digest walking away from Joe Tooney. So on one hand, at least you got a fourth for him before you weren't going to be able to re-sign him anyway. And on the other hand, that money can help you now most immediately in a Trey Smith extension, which is almost guaranteed to happen now. And then how you use that savings is what will be the third move to come.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, when the dust settles on all of this, if I had a crystal ball, we're not going to say ultimately when it's all done that Joe Tooney was traded to the Bears only for a 2026 fourth round pick.
Correct.
Joe Tooney was traded to the Bears for a 2026 fourth round pick and the opportunity to sign Trey Smith to a long-term extension. You're basically trading Joe Tooney going into the final year of his contract. You're not going to re-sign him anyway, I would imagine, after next season because he's 32. You're trading that for the opportunity to sign your 25-year-old right guard long-term, backload that money, and then you have more cap space available to go out and make the move for left tackle. So, yeah, again, it doesn't discount at all the importance of Joe Tooney. I mean, I think we can be clear. Not only was Joe Tooney probably the MVP of the team last year, but on top of that, if they don't have him, they don't make it to the Super Bowl. I mean, he was that essential to slide him over to left tackle. They were in desperation mode to have somebody be able to play left tackle, and he was versatile enough to be able to do that. So I don't think they make it where they need to be, and I don't think that they win two Super Bowls without him on that roster either. So he's incredibly valuable to that team, but unfortunately, you've got to do something to at least ensure that you've got long-term viability, and it starts with being able to re-sign Trey Smith long-term.
And look, so yes, it frees it up, and we'll, in just a second, we'll talk about where the best use of the money goes, but there is tremendous risk in the decision the Chiefs kind of had to make. You know, the more I look at it, like, it's kind of a move you had to make if you wanted to keep Trey Smith. And keeping Trey Smith and signing him long-term versus letting Joe Tooney play out and then giving him an extension and letting Trey Smith watch will be a fascinating.
Yeah, because you were gonna probably lose both of them after this coming season. Trey Smith after that.
Maybe if they let Trey Smith go, though, they could have still re-signed Tooney. I think honestly, it's more of a Joe Tooney at age 32 plus versus Trey Smith, for the next 4 or 5 years. Like, one stacked up against the other will be fascinating, because I'll bet you their contracts end up pretty similar when the dust settles. So the Chiefs chose the younger player. I don't disagree with the decision.
Yeah.
I don't at all. I don't want to be revisionist with it, but I think that will be the interesting thing to watch when the two things play out, is because look, they could have let Trey Smith just walk this year, but that would not have allowed them any financial flexibility. That's the other part of it. It's not just that they're saying we choose Trey Smith over Joe Tooney. He's younger. It's not that simple. In choosing Trey Smith over Joe Tooney, they allow themselves to use the money in other ways.
Yeah.
Had they just let Trey Smith walk, they wouldn't have saved any money, right? He just would have, because he was on a rookie deal anyway. So it wasn't, they wouldn't create any financial flexibility by just choosing Tooney and letting Smith walk. So that's where we find ourselves today. Their hand was forced just a little bit in that decision. Now they have some money to utilize, and that's the next step. We both assume they will sign Trey Smith. That kind of has to be the next thing they do. After that, though, then we get into, okay, now what? I think we both think that they'll use the money at left tackle. That doesn't mean they will. Right? Ronnie Stanley may get an offer too big somewhere else. And the Chiefs are like, God, we can't pay that much for Ronnie Stanley. Like, that could totally happen. So then what? If it's not Stanley, then what do you do?
I think that you can then, work on some of these other free agents that, are pending for the Chiefs, whether we're talking about Justin Reed or Nick Bolton or, some of these other guys. You can try to find ways to bring them back. According to Nate Taylor, who covers the Chiefs extensively for The Athletic, he's reporting that Trey Smith is expected to get a deal between 4 to 5 years, around $23 million a year is where he's being projected to get a deal from the Chiefs. So whether that's 4 or 5 years, I'm unsure of, but somewhere around $23 million a year. One other note that I think is really, it's going to be really interesting to watch play out. Remember, there were only two teams that actually tagged a player this year, the Chiefs with Trey Smith and the Bengals with T. Higgins. There were no other franchise tags in the NFL this year. I think there's a pretty high likelihood that both of those guys will be off a franchise tag by the time this season starts. Trey Smith with a long-term extension, and T. Higgins either with an extension or the Bengals trade him. And then we'd have no franchise tag players in the NFL going into this season. Like, nobody playing on the franchise tag, at least from this season. There might be, you know, other things happening, but like, at least with this round in the offseason, that usually doesn't happen. There's usually at least somebody floating out there that's playing on the franchise tag. But that wouldn't be the case. You know, we'd have to watch both of those teams. But I do find that interesting a little bit.
I do too. So Tooney was on a deal that would be very similar. So like if you just looked at what the Chiefs signed Tooney to, but increased it by about $5 million a year, he was on a five-year, $80 million deal. So if it looks like Trey Smith will be probably four at 80 or five at 100-ish, that's probably just, you know, the market increasing. I think that's probably pretty normal, right? Maybe he gives him a discount on a long-term deal because what was he tagged at? 22, 23 million?
Yeah.
So maybe he goes for like 18 or 19 if it's guaranteed over four or five. So it's still going to be more than what Tooney would have cost you had you chose to go with Tooney over Trey Smith, almost certainly. But again, like they did with Joe Tooney when they signed him, they can very much backload the deal. If you go look at Joe Tooney's contract, which I have up right now, his cap hits in the first 3 years, it went from 4.5 to 8 to 13.5 to this year, that cap hit being almost $27 million. Okay, so they backloaded it. Let that be your guide to what's likely to come on a Trey Smith deal. They're going to do the same thing. So even if you just followed the Joe Tooney footprint, right? They made the year one cap hit for Tooney in his deal, $4.5 million. Okay. So even if they make Trey Smith's, let's call it $5 million, and you cleared Joe Tooney's contract, I think, again, my Neanderthal understanding of the cap is it will have created around 11 or 12 million. Okay. That's still not enough to go get Ronnie Stanley. Still not. So they're going to also have to do some other stuff. That begs the question then. Okay, you get everything done with Trey Smith, but you get priced out of Ronnie Stanley. Again, who's slightly worse than Orlando Brown last year. Then what do you do? Now you're stuck a little bit if you're the Chiefs. And this is the risk of trading Joe Tooney. Joe Tooney was your backup plan at left tackle. Like, he was your emergency plan. He was your ripcord if everything was going haywire on you. That's what we saw last year, and it was a good enough plan to get him to the Super Bowl. So that's where I think the big risk comes, is you can't miss on left tackle now because you just lost your backup plan. If you can't afford Stanley, which is very possible, and it makes me wonder if they've had any, you know, illegal conversations with Ronnie Stanley's people to like gauge his interest, right? Like, hey, we might do this. We want to get you here. What will that take? Then what do you do? And I think that's the big risk, right? Because you can't use that money to move up in the draft. You can use that money to, though, fill holes in your roster that you might have envisioned filling through the draft and trading up to take your left tackle. So not a bad option either, by the way. If you use the money to attack some of the positions you foresee having to attack through the draft, and you use the draft capital to move up to take your tackle in the first part of the draft, I think that's another option worth keeping in the back of our head for the Chiefs.
I think it depends upon, you know, where we have the top tier left tackles rated out in the draft. Right. Like, I know that there are a couple that
at least the top 10.
I know that there are a couple that I think are projected, may or at least maybe one projected on a lot of the mock drafts, too, in
the
top 10.
And the LSU.
Yeah. That's right. You know, so if you're going to go and do that, I get it. I understand the desire, because the long term play, if it works out, is cheaper in the long run because they're going to be on a rookie deal, et cetera, et cetera. So from an investment standpoint, just pure dollars and cents, that's the way that Brett Veach has been able to build his team over the years, is you spend a lot of money on the core guys, and then you have to hit on the draft. And then you supplement those players with guys from the draft. The only bad side, the only downside to that is they haven't gotten offensive line right. They haven't gotten the ends of the offensive line right, through
They've
the
been
draft.
Bad.
They've been bad. And so I typically have extremely high confidence in Brett Veach's ability to draft well, except on the offensive line. And so that you better make sure that whether it's the Texas guy or the LSU guy, if you're going to trade up into the top 10 to get your left tackle of the future, you better make sure that it is as sure of a thing as it possibly can be.
So I'm looking at a couple of mocks. The Missouri guy is also pretty consistently inside the top 15 or the top 12, let's call it. So let's say you've got to move inside the top 12 at minimum, right? You got to get inside the top 12 to get one of those three guys. Of course, the Chiefs' evaluation of these players matters, right? What do they think of them? It doesn't really matter what they mock at, but just to give us some idea, moving up from 31 to 12 is going to be expensive. It's not only going to cost you a first this year, it's probably going to cost you a first next year, right? So at minimum, it's going to be a couple of firsts, and you got to consider that. So but again, like, some of this is going to be out of the Chiefs' control, right? If Ronnie Stanley prices out and you can't get him, you can't get him. You just can't. I mean, that's a possibility for sure. At some point, he's too expensive and you can't afford him. So if you've got to do that, then what is the next best use of the money? So let's pretend that is the path. Ronnie Stanley's too expensive. So your option now is you've got to give up draft capital to move up. Now, what do you attack with the dollars that you saved in the Chotuni trade to alleviate what you'd need in the draft? I think you can attack receiver pretty easy. I think you can attack running back probably fine, you know, without, you know, not so you can check, you can, even though Kareem Hunt's gone and all the receivers are gone, I think you can get those done either late in the draft or more likely through free agents that just want to come play with Mahomes.
I think you focus that money on on Nick Bolton, on Justin Reed. You probably focus on Charles Omenihu. You probably try to, and this probably isn't tied directly to the cap space, but you know, you maybe try to get a Trent McDuffie extension going. Like, there are several things that you could attack defensively if you take the path, if you take the direction of we're going to try to, again, find our left tackle of the future through the draft and trade up in the first round to do it.
I agree. I think, you know, I think the ideal plan would be to be able to, like, get Stanley and just draft a ton of defense players again, because this is a defensive, by all accounts, a defensive heavy, like, defensive trenches heavy, talented draft and running back. And then you go that way, right? And then you continue to churn away and you deal with the fact that your defense may have some holes this year and you're going to have to deal with it with young players, but hope by the end of the year that a lot of the young players you will have had to draft really step it up and can do something. So I think you've got two kind of a fork in the road, and Ronnie Stanley's going to be the big catalyst of that. And can they get a deal with him done? They still have to extend Trey Smith to make it happen, and they'll still have to restructure at minimum Mahomes and probably Mahomes and a few others to make it happen. But I think those are the two likely paths for the Chiefs. I don't know which I prefer. If you could guarantee me that they loved one of the left tackles and could move up, I need to think about that, because I got to try to, like, think about a price tag, right? So let's say it cost you this year's first, next year's first, and that fourth they just got from the Bears. If it gets them the tackle that they like the most in a move up this year, would I prefer that over Ronnie Stanley? I would tell you I probably do. I probably do. I think. Yeah, I do. I do. I'll make that call. I would rather move up and get the young left tackle that you could just count on a cheap deal than spend a bunch of money on a tackle who's worse than Orlando Brown.
The other thing to keep in mind, too, and I know I'm oversimplifying, you know, the left tackle play, but it's not like it's, I would think, not like it's super complex and complicated for a left tackle to do what the Chiefs need, because they don't run the ball a ton. So you're not looking at needing an elite run blocker or left tackle. You're looking at pass protection. So whether you're talking the Texas guy, the LSU guy, if you're going to trade up and go first round for a left tackle, How do they grade out in just protecting the blind side of the quarterback? That's really, that's what they're, what they need. It's not about, we need somebody who can do two different things to protect the run well and the pass well. It's like, literally, we just need you to protect Mahomes. And how well can you do that?
And probably it gives you a clearer focus on, you know, they kind of went upside and with Suamataia and all these. You like getting one of those SEC left tackles who's had to guard or who's had to block SEC caliber pass rushers is the closest thing you're going to get to whatever you want to call it, a sure thing, right? Like as close as you're going to get. I know Ohio State has a tackle that gets put up into the first round sometimes. Like it, I think I would prefer that over Stanley if you can get it done. But there's, you can't guarantee that it happens before you have to make the decision, right? You could trade to whatever pick you want, but you can't prevent another team from trading ahead of you, right? You can't, like, it's unpredictable to go that path. That's what I gotta, that's what we'll see if the Chiefs have the appetite for. All right.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are happy to be joined by the publisher of GoPowerCat.com, our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, here on a Thursday morning following a K-State win at Cincinnati. Fitz, how are you?
I'm good. I'm over the trauma of the early portion of that game. I mean, it was 15-7, like almost 12 minutes into the game. Now I know how my wife chose me, because she probably looked at this and that thing's ugly, but it's a win. And
but it gets it done.
It gets done. And
that's right.
Technically, I never got it done because we don't have children. But the metaphor, the analogy is still there.
In other ways, look, I don't care what it looks like.
Yeah.
Once the calendar turns to March. I certainly don't care what it looks like for a team that has been streaky, if nothing else, but when, you know, it's healthy and at its best, we think probably still has a chance. Let's start with Coleman Hawkins, because they were at full strength finally. And, you know, it was a very Coleman Hawkins-y game, right? 9 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, a block, a steal. You know, he had too many turnovers and maybe that's rust. I don't know, But he clearly gives this team that final thing that it needs to have any chance, and it was good to see him back.
You're exactly right. He's a 6'10 guy that can close out a possession with a rebound. He can then turn and dribble it up court, although that was a part of his problems with turnovers, and shoot the three effectively, which he did at a key time for K-State. I think K-Staters, including myself, envisioned him as kind of the go-to guy. But he's more like a glue guy that connects all the other pieces. He wasn't very sharp last night. K-State had 12 turnovers, and he had 6 of them. And going back and remembering the ones I can, they were bad. I mean, you know, get caught in the air and have no place to put the ball. You know, just kind of mistakes you make younger in your career. And it looked like, you know, he was a little bit rusty. Maybe he'll bounce back. Hopefully his knee is going to be good for Saturday. They'll need him against Iowa State. But one thing I didn't expect, well, I didn't expect him to play, but once he did, I never imagined he'd play 35 minutes. And that was a warrior attitude. He was pretty gimpy by the end, but he was out there.
And it makes you wonder what'll happen in the next one, because you could potentially rest him. I mean, there's not really much on the line here. I think he gets to 500 in conference play. It is senior day, which would, you know, probably be his last home crowd college basketball game. So maybe he'll go. Maybe you rest him. I don't know. I just know they have to have him. It's interesting. Like, you can be the best player for your team and not be the team's go-to option offensively, right? Because I think that's what we're seeing. All of the things that have been said about him this year, like, he's their best player.
Yeah. Oh, well. Best all-around player, certainly.
David Gasson, obviously, is having a renaissance season, and I don't want to take anything away from David Gasson. But yeah, Hawkins has to be there.
Well, at this point, this team doesn't have enough parts to play without a part.
Maybe that's true, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I think if you took Max Jones off the court, you took Doug McDaniel certainly off the court, this team would have some issues. But I think Hawkins is the biggest piece that connects everything together. And I was surprised he came back. I mean, it told me a lot about the young man, that he's invested in playing at K-State, not just for the money and not just to be the bridge to professional basketball, because he could have just sat the games out. Probably K-State would have played three more games and be done with the season. But no, he came back, and now K-State's at 500 overall and in a position possibly to get a postseason bid, which his return would tell me is important to the team. And that's been something we wondered, if the team would want to play an NIT or the College Basketball Crown out in Las Vegas, a new event. But appears so. So now they're in a position at 500 to kind of make a run here, and Saturday becomes huge with Iowa State, because if you get that, even if you're one and done in Kansas City, you're going to be 500 at the end of the season, which I think is a requirement for any of that postseason.
Yeah, look, it's what are their chances, right? Like, are they matchup dependent? I don't know that they are matchup dependent. You know, like KU feels a little matchup dependent. KU's certainly got a way higher upside, I think. But they feel a little more – I don't know that K-State's matchup dependent. I think K-State, when they do what they do, they just – it's just like their – whatever it is that they want to do and can do and at their top end, doesn't really matter who they're playing, I don't think.
I would say that the one thing that gives them problems and they've solved it against Kansas, because they match Coleman Hawkins up with Hunter Dickinson. Why they don't do that with other teams, I'm not sure. There's a history there between those two coming from the Big Ten. But when they have a dominant shot blocker in the post, David Gasan struggles with that because he's not a true post. I think that impacts him more than anything because it limits his ability to get some of those quick, efficient points around the rim that he does and did last night. But he does get distracted by a shot blocker because they block his shots. They make it really difficult on him.
What's your ideal matchup here? I mean, the bracket, you know, the bracket is kind of set. Like,
I think this team, in an odd way, needing wins, I think this team would want to play on the first day. That's an odd thing to say.
Yeah.
But you jump then into that, you know, the second day, you miss out probably on a cheap win against Colorado. Which, you know, helps your win-loss total, which is really the game K-State's playing right now. And you move right into that round and maybe have a better opponent. So I don't know. I don't know who is a good matchup for this team outside of Colorado.
I don't want to play Houston.
You want to be on the opposite side. If you want to make a run in this tournament, you want to be on the opposite side of Houston. They're clearly, in my eyes, the best team in this conference. And maybe Tech is closing that gap, but yeah, Houston's just totally dominant when they play to their game. And if you want to make a run, you better be on the opposite side of the bracket and hope someone takes them out along the way. Because I think Houston's a national championship caliber team.
I do too. And in fact, I might take them there.
Exactly.
Duke's going to be hard not to pick, but if I don't take Duke, it'll be Houston. And I don't know all the possibilities of the bracket and how it might lay out or anything like that. But I would say, if I'm a K-State fan right now, and I don't think this is possible, but if it is, I'd want Kansas to have the chance to play Houston because they play them well, and then I'd want the piece of Tech or Arizona.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure outside of Kansas. So if you go outside, like obviously Tech and Arizona. But if you go outside those two teams and you look at everybody else in the conference at who might be able to knock off Houston and kind of give K-State that chance, I mean, who else can – maybe Iowa State? I don't think BYU is going to beat Houston. I don't think Baylor is going to beat Houston. I think it's got to be Kansas. I think it's got to be Kansas. Maybe Iowa State.
I guess Texas Tech is playing really good basketball, but – you know,
but you wouldn't have – they're not. There's no chance, right? They could have Tech play Houston before they'd play Houston.
That's true.
I don't think.
That's very true. That's a good point. But, yeah, they're so good. They're just – and it's the defense that leads the way for them. And it was the defense that led the way for K-State, last night. They played really sound defense. They didn't attack them. They didn't have a bunch of steals. They didn't break them down. They didn't press them. What they did was they just kind of stifled them. They always stayed between the offensive player for Cincinnati and the rim as best they could, particularly down the stretch. They made every shot contested. They closed out. They did some very fundamental things there on the defensive end down the stretch that were crucial. This team's going to play better than that. But to get that win, I think, was really crucial. And now pick up a little momentum heading into Saturday and into the Big 12 tournament.
On the women's side, they're stumbling a little bit here, Fitz.
Yeah.
I think, what is it, three of the last four they've lost, albeit all the good teams. They'll begin their Big 12 tournament today. What's going on there? And can they recapture some of that lore that made us think they would have a chance to be like a Final Four caliber team?
Well, they got to get Lee back and healthy, and I don't know that that's going to happen. They might get her back, but healthy is the problem. And teams have kind of figured out how they play without her. And I think they've started to circle in on that with different things. And it's a shame. I mean, this is the exact same thing that happened last year. The results are appearing to be the same, if not worse, because if they lose too early in Kansas City, they have no chance probably of hosting first and second round site. They seem to be on that line still as a four seed, honestly, Jacob, because they'll put 8,000 fans in the stands.
Yeah.
So I think they're kind of cheating the four line off the five or even six line. And they played 11 a.m. against UCF. They've got to win. As you mentioned, their losses have not been to bad teams. So you need to just continue through this bracket and as far as you can and kind of show something. You might want to beat someone along the way too. So I think these next few days are huge for K-State women.
All right, let's talk. I want to talk a little football with you, Fitz, before we let you go. We got a couple more minutes here. The big storyline right now is, no more spring games.
Yeah.
Is K-State doing a spring game? Have they been doing a spring game? Like, people are making this out to be a bigger deal than I think it is. I don't even know who does spring games anymore.
Yeah, no, they have not done a spring game. And Chris Klieman, one of the reasons I love him much is he, like me, is very opposed to spring games. I think they're silly. I think they're dated. I think they were a great marketing tool available before we had social media and all this radio and all the YouTube and all the different ways to get your message out. I have pushed K-State to do it, which we're seeing, I think, other schools do, a spring festival. Have some types of events for the fans, maybe a concert, anything you can think of to make it fun. And I don't know if they'll get around to that, but if there's money to be made in it, I think you'll see schools go to it because everyone's going to be squeezing bucks out of this for the revenue sharing, even the big schools, because they're going to keep up with, Ohio State wants to keep up with Georgia and so on. So everyone's going to be squeezing bucks out of everything. And I think spring festivals where you might be able to make money off of fans coming to town might be a really cool thing.
I agree. I think that's a great idea. I think fans will get as much out. You probably have even more fans, right? You could make it a big fundraising event, music, skills challenge for the players.
Exactly.
I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority, but a spring game has never been that interesting to me. Like, it just never has. But it's almost like it's being treated like there's a lot of things changing about college football that would tell you it's all about the money. I just don't think this is that big a deal.
Yeah. Spring games are boring. I mean, coaches don't want to show anything. They you get players injured. And outside of a few big plays, there's not much to cheer about. I want to see the big guys get on a tug of war. I think fans would love that. I'd love to see the quarterbacks do a throwing challenge or anyone else on the roster wants to. I want to know who the fastest guy on this team is. At 40 yards or even 100 yards. I want to see those types of things. That'd be awfully fun.
And then make live music and beer a part of it too. I'm with you, Fitz. All right, gopowercat.com, at Life of Fitz on social. Go find all the latest as we get ready for the postseason. Fitz, appreciate it.
Thanks, sir. Good talking.
All right, that'll do it for us on Sports Daily. Our thanks to Tim Fitzgerald for stopping by to talk a little K-State hoops. Hey, they're on a streak again. That's all you can hope for. They have one more in the regular season before we all shift our focus to the Big 12 tournament. If you missed anything with Fitz, you can go back and listen to that on the Odyssey app. The whole show is available each and every day on the Odyssey app. Coming up today, Rich Eisen follows us 11 to 2. Jim Rome after that from 2 to 5. You've got Shocker Basketball taking on Rice tonight, 6 o'clock over on KEYN, and the Jerome Tang Show here on KFH at 7. Thanks for being here. For Tommy, for Max, I'm Jacob. We will see you tomorrow.